You are listening to Tech Talks, a podcast by the Technology Education Collaborative. Tech is an Arizona nonprofit that empowers people with useful information about the extraordinary technology they use each and every day. Today, we're sitting down with Laura Ellington, a lifelong systems engineer. You may recognize the name if you've looked at the tech blog, where we actually did an interview with her, and she talked about what it was like to be an engineer in the 70s when it was cool and sort of new things were coming out. And it was such a popular blog that we decided to sit down and ask her a couple more questions and just kind of get to know Laura a little bit more. Hi, Laura.
Thank you for talking with me today. How are you doing?
We're doing pretty good. All right, so I just got a couple of questions here for you, and then we can take it where it goes. Sound good?
Sounds great.
All right. So first of all, just tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about your work history and your background.
My work history started, as an engineer, it started while I was still in college. And I've always applied the principles of the systems engineering training that I have, no matter which industry I'm in. So your description is correct. I am a lifelong systems engineer.
And what got you interested in that? Why did you decide to study it?
Systems engineering? It was sort of I'm going to stay in engineering. What classes did I like? Let's go with that.
And so what drew you to it, though? Like, why do you like it?
It makes sense. There's not these random formulas that you have to figure as at least as a student, there's not these random formulas you have to work with and you're going, I don't know if I have a right answer or not.
Fair enough. You like the logic, the solidity of it, the kind of definiteness of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty common around engineers. So given the time period that this was, were there a lot of other women in your classes, or was that a unique thing?
In the 80s, no. There weren't a lot of other engineers. Typically, I would be maybe 3 in a class of 30.
Wow. And do you think that impacted your work, or do you think it impacted your learning, or no?
During high school, I'd already been in classes where I was one of, in that case, 32.
Okay.
So to me, it was no big deal. I'd already been there.
Okay. That's kind of what we hear. So that is something that I want to ask you about, like kind of coming up and having a career during that time period. So there's a lot of talk, especially recently, there's just a lot more women in STEM. It's a lot more common than it used to be. There's still some issues. There's definitely some conversations happening. But for the most part, it's not, you know, I don't think it raises as many eyebrows anymore if, you know, there's a woman engineer or computer scientist or, you know, a woman in a STEM field. But my question for you is, because of that, there's a lot of conversations, particularly with younger women who are in their early 20s, maybe mid-20s, and there's all these TikToks coming out where they're saying, you know, it's done, there's no glass ceiling, women can do anything, they're not dealing with any issues anymore. You know, we've kind of conquered the mountain. We're here now and we're here to stay, and we don't have to talk about any gender issues in the workplace and particularly STEM-oriented fields because it's just not a big deal anymore. And I'm just curious to know what your perspective of that is, having like a 30-year time span to look back on.
I personally wasn't. I did have some glass ceiling I had to deal with. But as far as the conversations, because of my upbringing, it didn't affect me. I still see some women of like, well, I don't like that conversation. And I'm like, that's part of the, how would you say it? The, just how we talk.
Mm.
It's not something against you or anybody. It's just the garbage that happens.
So like certain comments in the workplace or anything like that. It's just people talking.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. I think there's a lot of that observation. So given that, do you have any advice? Like what would your advice be for like a young woman who wants to get into a STEM field or into engineering specifically?
Hold on. Don't let people sway you away from it.
And why do you think they might be? Like, what do you think would discourage someone from pursuing it?
Some people might say, oh, that's such a hard, that's a difficult, how, you know, you'll never make it. You have to know all of the math there is to know. Yeah, there is some math, but then again, there's, you know, if you're going into psychology, there's certain theories you have to understand. Sure. Math is just the tool. It's not the end all.
That's fair. I did read a statistic that said engineering has one of the highest dropout rates, and it was engineering and I believe electrical engineering are the two of the highest dropout rates because of some of the course requirements and the prereqs that are required. Well, so that sounds to be pretty in keeping with that.
Yeah. Well, the one thing about electrical engineering was information about electricity or just electrons in general. No one has painted green yet and shown us where it goes. So, yeah, electrical engineering is still that, field.
Fair enough.
I tried it. I memorized it, so I had to get out.
Fair enough. So tell me a little bit more about your career. What is something you've done that you're really proud of or that was just really great to work on? Or what's some of your best experiences?
Challenging the norm.
How so?
I volunteered, or was, I guess, voluntold, because no one else would do it, to create a quality program for the people who were doing the forward thinking of what technology would be used in 15 to 20 years.
And when was this?
This was back in the 80s, early 90s.
Okay.
Some of the fruition of this, basically it's all done now, but that those decisions, those white papers, those conferences attended, think tanks, those were the activities of the group that I was supposed to create a quality measurement for. So all of what they did, which wasn't programming, which was the rest of what the company did. So we stepped back and I let them guide because I knew that most of the people in that group had gone into management, reached a certain level, and said, I'm going to go back to the technical stuff.
That's also very common. That's still true today.
Yeah. And so these were strong personalities. These were very well read, very well received individuals in their own communities.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what we stepped back and did is, okay, what are you doing? You're sharing information with people.
Sure.
How do we share information and measure it? And the key point was, is this information useful? And so a lot of our measures were around that. And the reason why this became the best experience is I had one person who was a holdout. Basically, you'll never be able to measure what I do.
Okay.
And I stood my ground. About a year later, he was all excited, came to me and said, I need your help. I need to put a measure to this.
So just so I understand this, so basically you were asked to put a quantitative metric on top of theoretical tech, like on top of theories that were going to guide technology that didn't exist yet.
Correct.
Is that accurate?
Correct. That's one way of approaching it, yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's quite the assignment.
It was fun. It was fun, to say the least.
And you said some of that's in fruition now. So this is tech that exists now.
It's tech that created the groundwork for what we have now. Cellular, the how messages are multitasking with equipment, because, well, in the company that I worked for, we already did that. That was our framework to start.
Okay.
And so we were coming from that viewpoint, and that's, you know, pretty much how it operates now. When you're on your cell phone and you move between tower to tower, the messages that come back and forth, multiple pieces of equipment are involved that you'll never see.
Sure.
And there are messages flying, handoffs and stuff like this that people working with networks understand. But, you know, how we can do that and how it will happen, well, it came from telecommunications.
Sure.
That's what it still is.
Sure.
It just changed, shall we say, morphed into a different form.
That must be so cool to be able to look back and know that you were a part of that. Like, I don't know. Do you get excited when someone uses their cell phone? Because I would.
I've been using it for so long, it doesn't excite me anymore.
It's not cool anymore.
It's just a natural transition. Now, where it was cool was when it was still in infancy, but then you had to carry this 20-pound battery pack.
So this is before even, like, the brick phone, like the famous brick phone with the static antenna, the first cell phone?
This was a brick phone.
Okay.
With a battery pack. This was before you could be away from your battery pack for your phone. So you were actually hooked into a battery pack.
Very cool.
So it was before you had phones in your car.
Okay.
The big thing was, oh, I got a phone in my car now. We look back on it and go, yeah, it's that, you know, connection between your phone and what's in the car already.
I still think that's pretty cool, though. So you mentioned working in multiple different kind of fields or industries. Like, what have you all done? I mean, we know telecom's one, so okay, fair enough.
I've actually gone outside of engineering.
Okay.
So, you know, some of it's been customer service.
Okay.
I'm now an educator.
Okay.
I've been in the education field in one form or another for over 15 years.
Wow.
Well, I count homeschooling as part of being
teaching
an educator.
Teaching is teaching. It all counts.
Yep.
If you're imparting knowledge, it counts.
Yep. And let's see, what other fields can I give a broad brush to? Call centers, working with the data. So it'd be data analytics.
Okay.
Pretty much my degree set me up with a lot of knowledge so that I could drop into any field, be it anthropology through zoology, didn't matter.
So what was the specific degree that you earned?
It was actually a Bachelor of Science in Systems Engineering.
Okay.
There's a person that, you know, looking back on it, he was one of the founding individuals, well, maybe not founding individuals, but more coalesced the theory.
Mm-hmm.
When I was at U of A. So, you know, looking back, I'm like, ooh, that was quite an accomplishment.
Yeah.
I think the strangest class, though, when I was taking my engineering degree, because I'd been in other engineering degrees, I started in ceramic engineering, switched to electrical, and then ended up in systems because, well, that's the classes I liked.
Sure.
Out of all I'd taken. The strangest class, though, that I had to go back and take was Psychology 101. And I'm like, wait a minute. I've got all this science, all this math, all this theory about how to solve situations, you know, to take care of meeting this goal based upon these requirements and limitations. Psychology? And, you know, it stayed with me for a long time, and then I realized, wait a minute, I have been using that psych class my entire career because I know how to talk to people now.
Mm.
where I'm watching a lot of engineers who've new in the field or been in the field for a long number of years, that they, if they're not in their office, they cannot talk.
Sure.
They will go back to talking only their technical stuff.
Right.
I'm like, that's, wait a minute. There's more to life than just your engineering stuff.
Yeah. That actually segues nicely into my next question, which I was going to ask you, like, what do you think the most, you've obviously built like a wide array of skill sets, but what do you think the most important skill you have is? Is it that communication piece or something else?
Well, it's communication and assessment of situations.
Okay.
I can quickly assess what's going on, but then, well, sometimes I just have to call a spade and let the cards fall where they may, because sometimes there is no good way to say it. But I'm still working on the right way to say it.
Fair enough.
And so I think my biggest challenge still is communication.
Okay.
Communication without, particularly outside of the industry, communication without stepping on toes.
Okay. So just a little bit of bluntness, a little bit of unvarnished truth.
Yeah. There.
That tracks for an engineer, not going to lie. I've known quite a few. Yeah. At this point. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. We're kind of, we do have a black and white streak.
It's the liking solid things. It's the liking like very crisp, hard truths that are very tangible and very, very established. That's fair enough. So I guess the only other question I would have regarding your career, your work is, that's just kind of it. But I am curious to know, like, so we talked about the communication and we talked about the not getting discouraged, not getting intimidated by any of the math stuff. But anything else as far as somebody who's entering the work, like if you were entering your first job, if you had your first position, you were just starting your career, what's something you think that would be good to have in mind as you progress in your career?
The sky's the limit.
I like that. I love that.
Even though you're a female, you have the same skill set that a male does. You took the same classes they did. The advantage you have, though, that they don't have is you can see multiple things and you have a much different capability of understanding. Don't shut that down. Let your innate ability to go, I don't think that's quite right because I've seen something similar. The hard part then again is communication. And don't let fear of communication stop you. Like I said, call a spade a spade. They'll tell you how they want you to say it.
Fair enough. And then as far as you go, so what are some things that you do in your personal time? Like what are any projects you're involved in, any groups you're involved with?
Well, I'm the Tech Ed Collaborative. Of course.
You are, in fact, a board member of the Technology Education Collaborative. I agree. This is your most important job. But you actually are involved in a lot of other cool things.
Being a coach for a cybersecurity team of high school students, being involved in Civil Air Patrol, which is a civilian auxiliary branch of the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a long history and a strong base of people. There's a lot of pilots in there because they need to keep their hours up, and search and rescue with a Cessna plane gives you the hours. Other than that, I have a 100-pound dog I play with and a garden I dabble with. I'm finally figuring out some of the seasons in Arizona after way too many years.
Well, hold on. They might be changing. You know, the summers are getting more extreme. Like, you know, we're having drier monsoons. There's a lot of stuff happening.
Pick different trees.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. You are so awesome. And I'm so glad that you sat down for this.
Thank you. I would like to encourage those women who are already in fields where there is a male presence to go ahead and take on the technology, because if you've worked in that industry where there's already a strong male presence, you have the skills that you need to negotiate engineering and technology in general.
So I will say, just in certain conversations I've heard, or not heard, but have been a part of, one of the things that I have heard, though, is there's still the women who do feel like there's still pushback, the women who do feel like it's still not as easy to be the only woman in the room in some of these rooms, or on some of these like development teams or product teams. They talk about how it's this kind of weird environment where no one is exactly unprofessional, right? Like everybody's courteous, everyone's professional, nobody's making any, you know, untoward remarks or doing anything that you would like call HR for. But there's still this kind of like exclusion that happens. Like you're not invited to lunch and that's when everybody's discussing the product and now it looks like you're not contributing. Things like that, right? And I'm just curious to know, like, did you ever run into anything like that? Like did you have any challenges that you faced?
I did have challenges like that. And what I normally did was turn the tables and said, hey, let's go. I would initiate, let's go to lunch.
Okay.
I didn't let being excluded keep me out of the loop. I, for lack of a better word, forced my way in.
I love that. And did that work pretty well? Like, did that usually work out for you?
Yeah, it did.
Nice.
It did because, you know, at a certain point, after one or two times of that, I was included.
Sure.
Because they knew I didn't want to be left out.
And they also had a chance to just talk to you. Well, I mean, assuming if you're working, I think that's where the frustration for a lot of women lies, is that you're working with them. So it's not as though they don't know your skill set. They don't know your abilities. They don't know what you're capable of. And I do think in some of those exclusionary situations, the frustrations that I've heard, which I certainly understand, is that there's no other reason for it. It has nothing to do with your skill set. It has nothing to do with your capability. It's just you're the only woman in the room. And I think that's where the frustration lays for a lot of. And I hear that more in the development and programming world and a little bit in the advanced technology, the quantum research spheres. I've definitely heard that conversation come up a lot.
Well, and sometimes it's not so much you as it is. The men don't know how to navigate just a platonic situation.
Sure.
You know, maybe some of them are married.
Sure.
Maybe there's that behind them. You know, it's hard to read.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a way, you almost have to read the people you're trying to make more communication with.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them you can't. I'll be honest. Some of them you can't. But, you know, making yourself part of the group,
mm-hmm.
regardless of who's in the group, that's the key.
Fair enough.
Sometimes you have to make up your own group.
Well, that doesn't surprise me to hear you say. It's definitely one way or another it's happening, right?
Well, yeah, when you start a four-wheel drive club and have the first trip to Hell's Gate. It's an actual location in Arizona.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very cool. All right. Well, thank you again so much, Laura.
All right. You take care.
This episode was recorded at the Advanced Cyber Systems Lab at Gateway Community College. The Advanced Cyber Systems Lab is open every Monday through Thursday from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m.